Army veteran Rico Danielson talks about his struggles during his transition out of the Army and how he eventually found his way in digital forensics. Rico is now one of the best digital forensics experts in the United States. Coming up next on Veteran on the Move.
Welcome to Veteran on the Move. If you're a veteran in transition, an entrepreneur wannabe, or someone still stuck in that J-O-B trying to escape, this podcast is dedicated to your success. And now, your host, Joe Crane.
My good friend and fellow veteran Bob Ulin has come out with his new book titled Transitions 2.0. This is the best book for any transitioning veteran. Check out Transitions 2.0 at veteranonthemove.com/transitions. Rico Danielson from Battlefield Parenthood, which is a great book, and also expert in digital forensics. Welcome to Veteran on the Move. Thanks for being here and telling your entrepreneurial story. Before we get to talking about business and entrepreneurship, take us back and tell us what you did in the Army.
Thanks, Joe, for having me on. It's an honor and a privilege. So I started off as a 92 Fox, a fielder in the Army, and then I quickly went back and reclassed to a combat MOS. I deployed to Iraq. It was real fun. It was very hard work. And then in 2008, I actually got medically retired, and then I went back again as a private security operator for a various three-letter organizations, and did that for a very long time, up until about 2014. And from there, got to experience different op tempos of private security, actually working with a lot of Marines in Afghanistan, specifically in Iraq and Ramadi as well. And it was a good tours. I like those.
And as you ended your Army career and you started your transition, what was your transition like? And were you looking to get out yourself, or did you get your marching papers? And what was your transition experience all about?
You know, Joe, my transition was very, very tough. It was very hard. I went through a divorce. I'm pretty sure like other single veterans have gone through. It was very hard. After that, I was couch surfing, pretty much being homeless for a long time. And then just going through I was trying to find myself, trying to find my purpose through treatments, through the VA, different modalities of treatments and whatnot. And then I remember at one point, I think I counted, I had 28 jobs. And I was like, holy moly, this is a lot of jobs. And I was like, okay, maybe working for someone is not the best attribute. And I realized I could be an entrepreneur. And I come from a long line of entrepreneurs. My mother and father were both entrepreneurs. My dad was a Marine, actually. He was a gunnery sergeant. And even on the side, he would have his own business, but he would make me go work my own business as a child. So I think the entrepreneur spirit was always in me. The transition was very tough. I lost my son in a custody battle, and then I researched even more that a lot of people lost their children in the custody battle as well. Just trying to get your footing and trying to find a purpose was the biggest hurdles in the transition, I believe. But it was until 2010 is when I kicked it in the gear. You know, put your hands down and just say, hey, enough is enough. And, you know, you just got to muscle up and do the work. And after that, just went to law school. Graduated. I started up a small digital forensics firm. I actually got another scholarship to finish up an MBA in IT management for the Wounded Warrior Scholarship. And then I just continued to get another master's as well from University of California, UCLA. And it was a great, great beneficial program. It wasn't until I actually had to kick myself in the butt and be 100% accountable to myself that things started lining up.
Interesting. Now, how did you get into digital forensics? What's that all about?
Sure. So I actually saw this when we first did a raid in Iraq a long, long time ago. We would snag up a little bit of these computers, the little burner phones the Iraqis would have on their hands, and we would just toss them to the intel guys, and I didn't know any better. So one day this guy said, hey, man, you want to check this out? I said, absolutely. And mind you, I'm just a grunt, just a gun toter, trigger puller, and I'm watching this guy plug in the cell phone and extracting data, and then he's handing it over to the analyst, and I'm watching this whole process. And mind you, I'm just a young private at the time. I didn't know anything. And I'm watching this data make it all the way to the commander, and the commander is like, I need to make a battlefield decision now based on this information. And I said, you know what? If you brought that back to the United States in the consumer market, that's going to make you money. So as the years go by, I really didn't pay attention to it. I saw the same thing in law school. Now private organizations like health firms, banks are now starting to be very inquisitive upon digital forensics and how it's going to help them benefit of what's going on. And I met another gentleman. He was a digital forensics expert in San Diego. And he said, hey, you need to get into this business. And so I looked at it, looked into it very hard. And I said, you know, this is well within my capabilities. So during law school, I would go to law school all day, all night. I would go bounce at bars. And then I started studying. And then I would just work so much and save a percentage of that money that I had stashed away to buy. Back then, it was a $2,500 application software to do digital forensics. And I remember just working tooth and nail for that. And I finally started up my digital forensics firm. And when I did, I actually landed a murder of death penalty case. That was my first case. And I was like in the jackpot. I was like, oh my gosh. And then all of a sudden it just propelled upwards. I did very good work. You know, customer service was on point. My end users were happy. My clientele was happy. And then it just kept going up. And now I have the notoriety of being one of the best digital forensics experts in the United States.
Wow. No kidding. And I was in Iraq, two different times, total of about 14 months. And I certainly remember all the digital forensics that was going on. It was actually not necessarily comical, but almost unbelievable, how that war was fought digitally with digital forensics and cell phones and computers and everything else. So before we hit the record button, we were talking about digital forensics with military folks, veterans, especially amongst divorce. And I think, have you gotten involved in helping military members when they're going through a divorce, how to defend themselves from digital forensics, so to speak?
Yeah, kind of. Not necessarily from, but actually to show them, hey, so this is what's going to happen if they subpoena your phone, if they subpoena your email, your laptop, or whatnot. This is how digital forensics is going to be leveraged against you in the court of law. Mm. Because you know, the prosecutor or the respondent has a duty. You know, they're an attorney. They're trying to get after whatever they need to get after. And that statement of what can be used against you will be used against you, you better bet they will, man.
Okay, so give us an example of something that's used against a military member in digital forensics. Is it, we're talking about the conversations between the military member and their future ex-spouse, or lifestyle choices and things they're doing with their buddies on the weekends, or what?
Sure, so let's take both of those. One of them would be a conversation you might get baited into with your ex-spouse, whether male or female. All of a sudden, they know how to press your buttons. They figure your sequential button order out. And what they're going to do is they're going to hit 1, 2, 3 and bait you into the argument and show you have erratic behavior. And let's just go worst case scenario here. You're a veteran who has PTSD, who's been diagnosed with depression, anxiety, PTSD, right? And then you go off the hinge and you lose your temper and you get an argument saying some FU bombs or just whatever the case may be. Now that person can capitalize those, you know, preserve those and present them to the court of law and say, hey, look at this person. This person is acting out of order, acting irate. It's indicative of crazy behavior. And I motion to take this away from the parent. Let's just say it's child custody. I motion to take child custody, whether permanent or temporary. And sometimes these temporary custodies go for 2 years. And that's the pinnacle of how it starts. And what I've seen is whenever these evidence are presented and they actually go in full swing and they take the children away or they make the veteran go to PTSD counseling on top of other avenues, it puts a big strain on this veteran. And I want to say 8 times out of 10, I've seen other veterans just act out of character, like go on drinking binges and just do stupid stuff out of character. And now it's just more ammunition on top of ammunition to preserve their position.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard that story, heard that exact story 100 different times with military guys getting divorced and the child custody and all that. So, so in addition to digital forensics, you've actually, with helping a lot of military members with divorce and other court situations dealing with digital forensics, you've actually come up with a book, Battlefield Parenthood.
Absolutely. So I've actually been down this avenue, this dark alley, for a very long time. And I saw how digital forensics were leveraged against me. And I saw how it was leveraging my PTSD on top of that. And then on top of that, I saw it happen to a friend. And I said, man, there's got to be a way. There's got to be a checks and balances here. Is there a manual? And every parent that I've ever talked to said, there's no parenting manual. There's no way. And so I just started writing this book. And I said, there's got to be a way. I just want to help some veterans out. And one thing led to another. And it basically says how the book is a manual to so you can stay in the game for your children, even if you're at wartime, even if you're court mandated to be away, even if you have PTSD. It doesn't matter. Like, this is to show the presence of you as a parent saying, hey, I'm always here no matter what. I love you no matter what goes on.
And what kind of things are in the book? Is it, because it's certainly not all about digital forensics, right?
No. Actually, it's there's a small chapter in there. It's chapter 9 and 5. And basically it states that watch your tonality with your ex-spouse, because you have to act as if they're a judge. No matter what, they're observing you. They're always judging you, right? And the other aspect of the book is it goes into understanding where your parameters are, your shot group, your shooting ranges. So if you have supervised parenting, okay, great. What can you do outside of that to be there for your child? Chapter 5 goes into legal advisement in regards to whatever you do and whatever you say might even be used against you. And there are also other multiple chapters as well that would provide more insight onto that. I take a couple examples of training the forces when I had trained some of the Iraqi special police and the Army and their National Guard as well, and how you can correlate that to parenting. So you provide reward to your child every time they do an accomplishment or a duty, instead of a negative connotation, because that right there will be taken into consideration of your parenting dynamics of how you parent.
I mean, yeah, there's no doubt that even among married couples, one or both of them are in the military, parenting in the military household is definitely unique, has its own challenges, and can be quite difficult. So with your digital forensics and your book, Battlefield Parenthood, how did you come to find yourself? I know when you first jumped into digital forensics, when you were saving your money and bought your first computer and you got that first case. Once that happened, once you had that first taste of entrepreneurship and I'm working on my own, where did it go from there and what did that feel like?
I felt very accomplished, like a sense of accomplishment that I hadn't felt in a very, very long time. A sense of belonging, finally. I'm like, oh my gosh. Instead of working for someone, 40 hours a week and I get paid every 2 weeks, I got paid now. And all of a sudden, I got real hungry. I wanted to make more. And I wanted to go at it with 100% effort. And I tried even harder. I would call people and let me tell you something. being a solo entrepreneur, not having any teams to back you up, no CPA, no one to write you a sales script or marketing, you have to figure it out, and you have to figure it out very quickly. And I can tell you what doesn't work, and I can tell you what does work in regards to helping customers and to sell customers. And then I realized I love being a business owner or being a part of a business decision making. Let me expand that to being a silent actor to different businesses as well, taking that leadership role in bars and gyms and whatnot. And it's been very fun.
Yeah. So and you're still going full time with your entrepreneurial venture, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So now that you're there and you've been at it for a while and you're making money, can you ever imagine yourself going back to working for somebody else?
I just had this conversation about going back to work for somebody else. If you have to take a job as an entrepreneur, I totally get it. The biggest thing I have to tell you is keep your mouth shut, because that's their business. They will operate on that side of the business for a reason. And what I've seen many people who come from the entrepreneur side, it's a corporate side, is that they have great ideas. And you're right. The entrepreneur way sometimes is the most effective, efficient way that people don't want to hear that. People don't want, they're there for their office politics. And that's the huge discrepancy where I've noticed the good veteran worker versus the entrepreneurship worker. Sometimes the entrepreneur worker just doesn't belong or can't function in the corporate environment because they literally think about solving the issue and the problem firsthand. No budgets. It's going to happen. Here's what we got. versus the corporate environment says, well, let's take that in consideration, take meeting minutes. You know, there's a lot more methodical process. And I learned that as well as being a politician for the city of Scottsdale, which I realized that I'm not a good politician as well. So,
so are you still a politician in Scottsdale, or are you done with that now?
I'm actually finished. I've served out the term. It was really great. My hat's off to the city of Scottsdale. I love them to death. My two areas of focus were LGTB and also the veteranship. And right before I left my term, we stood up another veterans court for the city of Scottsdale to help veterans get treatment over punishment, something like we did in Phoenix as well.
Wow. Yeah, because a couple episodes back, we were talking with Raz Schaefer from My Campaign Coach and how to run for office. And he's taken us, even though he's not a veteran himself, he's taken a personal interest in helping veterans run for office because veterans possess a lot of the great qualities that we really need in our political leaders around the country. And he comes in, gets behind him, trains them, coaches them to whatever level they may be interested in receiving. So it's interesting that that you're just coming to the end of a term in your local political office. So good on you for being out there and still serving in local politics.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back for our sponsor. Army veteran Bob Ulan knows the struggles veterans face in the transition process and has dedicated his post-retirement years to helping veterans successfully transition into the civilian sector. His new book, Transitions 2.0, is one of the best books for any veteran facing the transition process. You can find Transitions 2.0 at veteranonthemove.com/transitions. Also, Bob Ulan is the chairman and CEO of the Center for Transitional Leadership. CTL seeks to assist and empower Armed Forces personnel during their transition from military service to private sector employment, with particular focus on helping military men and women position themselves to be sought-after candidates in the civilian workforce. I have the pleasure of serving on the board of directors for CTL, and you can check out the CTL website by going to veteranonthemove.com/CTL. All right, we're back talking with Rico Danielson from expert in digital forensics. And we talked about his first book, Battlefield Parenthood, where he talks about using or understanding the complete aspects of digital forensics and how it can be used in divorce and child custody cases, especially as it relates to military families. But Rico, you're also working on another book. Now that you've become this entrepreneur, you're talking about you're putting together another book called Vetrepreneur, discussing the ins and outs and aspects of what it's like for veterans to transition into entrepreneurship. What's that all about?
Right. So it kind of starts off, the idea of Vetrepreneur is the trials and tribulations and the stories, successes and failures of my road. And what I wanted to do is actually locally here in Scottsdale, Arizona, interview different veteran entrepreneurs anywhere from, I think I have lined up a gun manufacturer, a three-gun champion, a CrossFit coach, a gym owner as well, and another one has a clothing line. And, you know, the book obviously starts off of where I was then. I was pretty much homeless, you know, kicking butt, bean bouncing, bartending and stuff like that, and just using all that money. And that transitions, the book transitions with you and, you know, asks you of your current state of employment, your frame of mind. I mean, do you have what it takes? Not necessarily to the gumption, the fortitude, or the discipline, but is right now a good time for you to be an entrepreneur? If your back is against the wall and you have no other choice, then I guess you have no choice. But do you have what it takes? Do you have the methodology, the mind frame, and whatnot? And also goes into there as well as you can't do entrepreneurship alone. One of the biggest mistakes that I think I've ever made is, oh, I got this, guys. No problem. I can do everything myself. I can be the webmaster. I can do the sales. You're only one person. And it talks about building your team of teams and going out there and being a systemized system. And then it goes into as well as the premise of building a system, not a business. Because if a business, it takes a lot more nurturing and maturing. Whereas if you build a system, you can have the money coming in end over end. And then also goes into the aspect of, you know, be wary of other people's agendas. I call them lines in sheep's clothing. And what does that look like and how that might manifest? And then the last part about it is personal branding. I believe that personal branding is going to be a huge onset, and a lot of people are behind the power curve. I'm starting to realize a lot of companies, private companies, if you have your own personal brand, they don't want to hire you, or if you've been an entrepreneur, they don't want to hire you. So it kind of speaks to that as well.
Interesting. A few years ago when I was getting, before I retired from the military, I wanted to get a master's degree in something just before I got out. And I knew I was going to go back to my airline job. So I really didn't need to pad my resume with the MBA or anything like that. I wanted to do something that I was interested in. I didn't realize it at the time, at the beginning of my search, but you could get a degree in entrepreneurship. So a lot of colleges have embraced the whole concept of entrepreneurship. And there you can not only get bachelor's and master's degrees, but there's even a few schools that are coming out with PhDs, doctorates in entrepreneurship. And that didn't exist the first time I went to college. I mean, getting a degree in entrepreneurship didn't exist because it's kind of counterintuitive. If you don't go to college to get a degree so you can go into business for yourself. I mean, that's what most people think. So interesting that there's actually a lot of businesses that do embrace hiring people that have entrepreneurial degrees because at least they're business minded, you know, maybe the startup mentality or even a large corporate structure where they want to put together a startup and they collect people from the rest of the business to go do this startup within another company. So it's interesting you mentioned, but I imagine, you know, the conventional wisdom in a lot of corporate America is if you've got a personal brand, if you've got something going on the side, if you're already an entrepreneur, we don't really want to hire you because you've got that entrepreneurial mindset and entrepreneurial mentality.
Right, right. That is very true. I think it's sad, but as you see the generational business gap coming up, you have a lot of younger generations coming up filling our workforce booths, which is awesome. I think it's great. And then you have a lot of older, more seasoned veterans in the corporate world that are there for the long haul and they're about to retire or they have maybe like another 5-10 years. And it's just a nuance. And I think the next 5 to 10 years, businesses are going to finally catch up, like some technologies you have to catch up on. I think businesses are going to finally see, oh my gosh, I need to hire this guy or I need to have him on my team because his brand is so huge and he actually knows what he's talking about. I need this guy.
Yeah. And if you want innovative thinking and if you're involved in a business that's always trying to come up with new products, new services, then having people that have the entrepreneurial mindset and know how to go through the entrepreneurial process are invaluable, even in a corporate job.
Absolutely. Going through the whole entrepreneurship battle, to me, speaks milestones to your mettle. I mean, if you're willing to endure being an entrepreneur for 6-10 years, Lord knows you can handle this office job.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why veterans make such great entrepreneurs. You know, the same skill sets and soft skills that veterans possess that make them good employees are many of the same skills that make them good entrepreneurs. You have to toss in a little bit of information on finance, money, accounting, how some other stuff works. Bring in some. You mentioned not trying to do it all on your own. I know that was one of the mistakes I made in the beginning when I jumped into this. This full time more or less entrepreneurial game when I was getting out of the military was I was trying to do everything myself because I wasn't making any money. I couldn't justify hiring somebody to do something for me if I wasn't even making money or I didn't know how it was going to make money. But it's so true that if you find yourself working in your business instead of on your business, then you're not going to move forward. If you're getting bogged down coding websites and tweaking social media stuff all the time, then you're not moving your business forward. And that's where you mentioned building systems, you know, instead of build a business, build systems, because you can hand systems over to other people and they can execute those systems. And too many solopreneurs out there are doing it all on their own and the whole business is in their head. And even today, so much of my business it's all up in my head. And I'm working on some processes and getting it all down and building those processes now with my own businesses. Because now I truly understand the need and the value to do all that. But in the beginning, I did not. So, building those processes and systems is vital for scaling the business and for its future success.
I agree. I mean, if you put checks and balances in those systems, then you're ahead of the game as well.
Yeah, and I imagine you're talking about when it comes to checks and balances, where if you turn over a set of tasks to a virtual assistant or somebody like that, you can't just let them run free with it with the bank account and not have any kind of checks and balances, because they could go the wrong way or totally mess things up.
Absolutely. So one of the two things that I always tell people is you want to get paid and you have to pay people in business. That's just the way it is. So the first thing I would tell you is to go hire a CPA or an accountant. It's very affordable. You'll be surprised how affordable people are nowadays, specifically with the leveraging of technology. And at that point, you can do yearly audits, and that's just an additional maybe $100 or whatever the case may be. And I think it's well worth the time spent and the add value that it brings. If you can just hand off, like you said, a task or a system to someone and just go in there and spot check it, it'll be all squared away. Your business will be forward moving. And the other thing is, I would say, is patience. Just patience.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, Rico, we're getting close to the end of our time. If there's any military folks out there that want to contact you about some possible digital forensics information, how would they go about finding you?
Sure. You can go to ricodanielson.com, or you can just email me, ricodanielson@gmail.com. I always answer. If not, my assistant will answer, and I'll get you squared away.
All right. And before we go, if you're talking to that veteran, soon-to-be veteran going through a transition, military spouse, they're looking to get into entrepreneurship instead of going out and getting that J-O-B, what kind of information would you have about being at the very beginning of their entrepreneurial journey?
You're going to have to hit the ground running hard. However, just believe in your product or your service, because if you believe in it, you're never going to sell anyone. You're just going to be helping people who have that need. So that's one. Two, there are no breaks. To me, there was no breaks. I'm going to hustle no matter what, day and night, night and day. And that's just the way it is. And if you're a single person, expect a lot of people to fall off. You're not going to be gone a lot. Expect to be single for just a little bit longer. Because a lot of people don't understand those characteristics of, hey, Saturday night, I want to go get a drink. Hey, I want to go get a drink too. But in reality, I want to make money.
Yeah, and it's going to take that discipline to actually setting a schedule for yourself and then actually sticking to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Set schedules, routines, regimens. Don't forget to do some self-care. Love yourself. To me, that's going to the gym every day. Every day I'll go to the gym. That's where you'll find me at 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. And after that, I'm back to work.
Yeah. And did you ever, in the beginning of your entrepreneurial journey, did you ever discover or have a difficult time holding yourself accountable? Like you might set a certain schedule, and then if something would come up, you easily change it or not stick to it because you know that you're only accountable to yourself.
Absolutely. I mean, why not? I mean, I really don't have any report to, whatever the case may be. I'm happy going to have to pay bills, and you have nothing else. Yeah, you're right. You're the only person to be, and you're by yourself. So guess what? Time to get to work.
Yeah, so it does take that discipline. And you know, don't underestimate, if you're coming out of the military, don't underestimate the fact that there's always a training plan, and there's always, you know, the big blue arrow pointing everybody in the direction they're supposed to be going. When all that goes away and it's just you coming up with the direction that the business is going, there's constant self-doubt, and there's always getting distracted by the latest shiny object. So it does become a little more difficult than most people imagine. I know I've fallen victim to that many times myself.
Whenever I would have self-doubt, what I would say is, okay, great, no problem. I really don't believe whatever I'm doing at this specific time. Where's my schedule? What am I supposed to be doing then? And follow that. And at that point, that would bring my true north back in line, saying, okay, this is what I need to be doing. This is my goal for the day. This is how many phone calls. This is how much I should be making. This is how many cases I should have by the end of the month. Ready, set, go.
Absolutely. Well, all right, Rico, thanks for sharing your entrepreneurial success story with us. Looking forward to hearing about your future success, and good luck to you, and continue marching on, and look forward to your second book coming out.
Sure, man. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, Rico. All right, these two veterans are Oscar Mike. As you can tell from listening to the Veteran on the Move podcast, interviews are a great way to tell your story and spread the word about your business. If you would like to get booked as a podcast guest, I recommend Interview Valet. You can check out Interview Valet at veteranonthemove.com/valet. Be sure to check out thrive15.com, the world's premier online education platform that helps entrepreneurs, aspiring entrepreneurs, and entrepreneurs learn how to start or grow a successful business. Start your free 30-day membership by going to thrive15.com and use the promo code VETERAN. Thank you for listening to Veteran on the Move, your pathfinder to freedom. If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes. Reviews are always greatly appreciated. So until next time, this veteran is Oscar Mike.